This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodi. It's our Health and Living segment. It's a Friday. Dr. George Lee in the studio with us. How are you?
I thought you have abandoned me.
Well, it's been 6 months, George.
Absolutely. Mm. And yet you're counting.
I am. It's been six months since I came to air at all.
I know. We miss you.
I know.
This is kind of a rare moment that I want to treasure.
Yes. I'm sitting in for Lee Chui Lin. So she's on leave. When she comes back, everything else will go back.
Oh, really? I thought somehow I've enticed you to come back. I thought you've missed me.
Well, you're not working hard enough.
All right. Okay.
So maybe if you do work hard enough, I might think about it.
Sorry.
Okay. We've got, it's Universal Children's Day, George.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we've got three stories lined up for you in relation to children, and we want you to get involved in this conversation. We're going to be touching on three different aspects of children. Mm. One, of course, is stress. I think yesterday's UPSR results said a lot to each other. We saw the headlines, crying children, crying parents.
Talk about stress,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, 1.1% of almost the 5,000 population of children who suffer UPSR only got 6 A's, and that's what they're all crying about.
I know. It's like, you know, the pressure we put on the children.
It
is unbelievable.
It is. But then again, you know, changing format at the last minute, you know, it does affect confidence as well, right? A lot of these children are working towards, are really motivated towards, you know, doing well. And shatters your motivation.
This gets to show that a lot of the time, our education system based on templates. So, you know, everybody just follow past few years' papers and then you don't think, you go on automatic mode.
Rote learning.
Absolutely. Mm. And then yesterday, the talk back, you know, I cannot call it in, you know, naughty me. It's like, you know, I don't have enough airtime. I have
and
to
call
it.
What did you call yourself?
Well, you know, Dr. George. No, actually, I call myself George.
Okay.
That's right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then they're talking about, you know, whether we can do away without homeworks and that sort of things. And a lot of people agreed with that. I think we homework is important. However, we need to change the way we do homeworks. We have to think about thinking strategies, you know, do it meaningfully rather than just regurgitating.
It's not just the homework, George. I think the way we teach in class as well needs to be relooked. You know, I was shocked to find out that in secondary schools, they don't carry out science experiments anymore.
Oh, well, it's just a lot of time.
How do you learn without carrying out an experiment?
It's not hands-on anymore. It is all models. It's all working on theory.
That's ridiculous.
Yes.
Would you think you would have been a doctor if you didn't have that hands-on experience
in the
science lab?
At the moment, it's like my time, we have to have cadaveric dissections.
Yeah.
And then the times move on because obviously you don't get enough cadaveric dissections.
I'm talking about secondary school, George.
Yeah, I know. Well, we're talking about the whole thing has changed. And then, you know, in the old days where we have to use a frog legs and stimulate it and sort of look at muscular contraction and things like that, that's perceived as, you know, unethical. And then it's moved on. So a lot of computer models has taken place. So about, like you said, you found out that there's no more experiments being carried out.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they've probably taken over by robots and, models, computer modeling.
That's absolutely ridiculous. Where do you see science going in all of this as
well,
a doctor? Have you seen this in the new doctors? Have you seen, a disadvantage?
Well, you see a difference in culture. Because, you know, when you were not around, Milton Lamb came over here and then he started talking about the new generation of doctors use technology and investigations to make diagnosis. You don't listen to patients. You don't do the traditional examination. So every time you hear something, you just do a battery of tests and then you rule out something. Or that. So it's a lot of wastage and then it's a lot of exposure of patients to unnecessary investigations.
Okay, all right. So that's our last story, actually. We're talking about children and apps and how they are very dependent on it.
On
we have technology-dependent children.
Yeah.
Really.
We, in a way, you know, we need to move with time. However, we also need to do that very cautiously.
Yeah, it's one extreme at the moment now, isn't it?
Okay.
So we're opening up the phone lines if you want to give us a call. The number is 0377109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or even text 01620019000. You know, just call us. Tell us how you feel about the stress your children are under. We're going to be talking about obesity as well, and how a new study shows that the lack of sleep can actually lead to obesity as well. And the last one, of course, is our technology-dependent children and what your thoughts are on that. So give us a call, text or tweet us. So the first article, George, we're going to be discussing is the traumatic stress that might alter a boy or girl's brain differently. Mm-hmm. You want to just give us a quick background?
Well, I mean, this is a new brain study that was carried out, essentially looking at traumatic stress affects the brain in adolescent boys and girls very differently. I mean, there's a structure in the brain called insula. Basically, this is a region that detects cues from the body and then during processes of, you know, emotions and empathy. And in the past, you know, girls who experience trauma are more likely to develop post-traumatic stress syndrome than boys experience it. But scientists that actually were unable to determine why. However, this processing system, the clinician says that there is a difference between boys and girls. And then so that is an interesting finding, that because that will determine how boys and girls should be treated very differently.
Exactly. So the insula is what we're discussing. And we spoke to Dr. Philip George about what he felt about this article and in particular what post-traumatic stress disorder is. Dr. Philip, could you just explain to us briefly what is post-traumatic stress disorder?
Yep, post-traumatic stress disorder is considered as an anxiety disorder, one of the five types of anxiety disorders, and is related to an event, a catastrophic event that might have happened to an individual that then leads on to a cluster of symptoms, which includes avoidance of things that, remind the person of the event. I think the best way to explain this is to maybe give an example. A person who's been involved in maybe a natural disaster like an earthquake would then, you know, when just seeing stories of earthquake on TV, get into that same state of distress and anxiety that he or she may have experienced during that period. There's also flashbacks. So they go through a period of, you know, experiencing that whole event all over again, although, you know, they're in normal circumstances. And then there are nightmares. And then they have a change in their whole mood. So they're more numb to emotions and feelings. And sometimes that leads to other problems like substance use and other issues as well. And relationships get affected in that whole process as well. And then there can be problems in terms of both sleep and appetite as well. So, yeah, cluster of all this contributes to post-traumatic stress disorder.
But there is a certain period in which it continues and only then you would categorize it as PTSD?
Yes, absolutely. So usually if it is just after an event, that can be an acute stress reaction, which usually may last up to a month. But if it persists and it continues and then it goes on for even up to about 6 months, then it's categorized as a post-traumatic stress disorder. So it has to be persistent, it's prolonged, and it continues. So that'll be more for PTSD condition.
What did you think of this study, Dr. Philip, where they say that the girls and boys react differently to PTSD, and that has to do with the structure of the brain? What did you think of it?
Yeah, actually, there are differences, and I think we're learning more about this in the structure of the brain between male and female. And it's, you know, it's seen in our day-to-day the behavior and perception and way we live. I mean, they all say men are from Mars and women are from Venus. But yeah, but we all have different ways. I mean, the gender differences are quite obvious. Women actually have more connections in their brain compared to men, and they have larger parts of the brain in certain aspects as well. The whole brain as an organ seems to be bigger in men, but it doesn't mean that they're more brilliant or intelligent. They actually have less gray matter than women.
Of course.
So I guess it's bigger because maybe they have a bigger body mass and they need, you know, more areas to control other parts of their body. But there is a big difference between men and women in terms of the anatomy of the brain, in terms of even the physiology of the brain. And that actually changes how they respond to different events that may occur in their life as well.
Okay, but in the past, scientists have been unable to determine why girls seem to be coping worse compared to boys. Were they not able to determine that back in the day?
Well, these brain studies are only recent. So they did notice that there are certain conditions that were more common in women. So stress-related conditions like anxiety disorders, PTSD being one, but also depression were more common in women. And it was thought that maybe that they were more the victims of episodes or events that actually triggered these conditions. But it's also contributed now, from what we see from this research, these areas of research, by physiological and anatomical differences they have within themselves as well.
So how have we managed boys and girls differently? Or have we been managing them the same when it comes to PTSD?
I think generally we've been managing them the same. And I think, you know, these studies actually suggest that we maybe need to relook at how we are doing or, you know, how we're conducting our management. Of course, the study that we're referring to is a pretty small study. In small numbers. It's not easy to do a study like this. So I guess we need to look or wait for larger studies and then look at what interventions would be appropriate for the genders as well.
Based on your experience, how would you already go ahead and manage this differently?
So I think there may be discriminatory things in the community that actually prevent girls from actually seeking help. There may be discriminatory infrastructure and social opportunities for girls. And I think we need to break those boundaries. We need to break through those things. NGOs may be helpful, but we need to also equip Government Link and other agencies to be able to deal with women issues, you know, female mental health issues, and have more services that are female-orientated in the areas of PTSD and especially of anxiety and, you know, the common conditions that women may be more prone to as well.
You know, in the article, it keeps saying what is very stressful could lead to PTSD and it affects the women more. But what is very stressful? How do you determine that?
Yeah, usually for PTSD, the definition is ideally a catastrophic event, an event that harbors on loss of life. Either the individual's own life or a person who's very close to them. So, for example, a natural disaster or even rape or abuse or, you know, a motor vehicle accident, something where it's a near-death experience, either in themselves or somebody who's very close to them. That's typically how we would identify the catastrophic event in relation to PTSD.
Okay. Were you excited with the outcome of this study?
I think it's improving our awareness and understanding, and I think we're getting to understand that a lot of psychological problems are just as physical as, you know, your physical illnesses. They're not up in the air, they're not something that people create, and they're not just what you call fuzzy sort of things. They're actually physical illnesses as well.
You know, George, I went on to ask Dr. Philip, because in the article it also said that there are studies that suggest the high levels of stress could contribute to early puberty in girls, you know?
Yeah, this is it. And I would say, because we're talking about catastrophe, like, you know, death in the family and that sort of thing. But a lot of parents probably will call in to say that stress is not just that. At work is a lot of stress. Failing exams is a lot of stress. Your expectation is a lot of stress. And that will have tremendous amount of physiological impairment on you, including puberty and something like that. And I think, you know, in light of the Universal Children's Day, I really think a lot of focus has to be looked at adolescent. Adolescent medicine is something that it's neglected.
Yeah, because I think we have only a handful of adolescent specialists.
That's correct. Yeah,
and I still take my kids to a pediatrician.
That's right. You know,
I think 14 and 17.
Hard pressed to find a adolescent. You know, and this is in medical viewpoint has to be a different approach on counselling, on history taking, that sort of thing. Both of us have teenage kids, right? And we are finding it difficult, first of all, just to be in the same wavelength. And just imagine trying to understand why are they not eating, why they're not sleeping, why, you know, this has impaired their physiological function. And to relate and understand whether they're undergoing stress or not is tremendously difficult. So I really find it hard. Therefore, I think this is a really important article. I've got a boy and a girl, and I really find it difficult to relate to them at the moment.
Really?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'll help you.
Just because you think I'm a China man, right?
Falling short of saying that.
Well, that's right. Well, I think you're right, because most of the time I just assume, you know, how my parents brought me up is the right way forward.
It isn't.
It isn't, because they are living in a different world.
Exactly.
And, you know, I
convince yourself, George.
Convince myself. That's right. Because when I see that I'm not communicating with the kids, right, okay, I always, the first thing I would think about is what would my dad have done, right? I should probably just rotan out. And then it's like, it doesn't work like that anymore. No. Well, first of all, you go to jail first, right? The parents probably go to jail. So I'm learning. But, you know, I must say, articles like this tells me that the boys and the girls are very different, and I can't compare them. That's the worst thing that, you know, my parents used to do to me as well. And it's kind of like, your sister did this, your sister achieved so much. And it's an incredible amount of stress when that happens.
Okay. We asked, finally, Dr. Philip, as to how this brings about early puberty in girls.
You know, what I found most frightening is there are some studies that suggest that high levels of stress could contribute to early puberty in girls. Is that true?
Yes. In fact, you know, high levels of stress play real havoc with our, what we call neurochemistry and our hormones. And so our corticosteroid is a buffer for stress. And, you know, when you're under high levels of stress, if it's temporary, you know, steroids goes up and then comes down back again. But if it's persistent, then it starts to increase and stay increased for long periods of time. This has a high influence on reproductive hormones. So, you know, people's, you know, whole hormone system in the body can change. And what that does is very often corticosteroid in our body, the internal corticosteroid, when it's in elevated levels for long periods of time, actually damage brain cells. They change the whole brain morphology, you know, the whole anatomy. So the brain changes itself as well. So anatomically and physically and psychologically, things just go haywire if they're, you know, under persistent chronic stress.
If you have been stressing your kids, I highly suggest that you slow down. I mean, look at the larger picture, honestly. That was Dr. Philip George, consultant psychiatrist.
Yeah, well, obviously the stress had impaired. I mean, if you imagine that the thing that we can see is the onset of puberty, what else can it cause, right?
Exactly.
The long-term damage.
As you said, havoc in the brain. So
what do you think is a havoc in the brain for your two girls?
It's difficult to tell, George. I mean, it alters, you know, and especially during puberty, you're going through so much of different things, isn't it?
Yeah, what do you think is the most stressful thing? I used to think for my girls is just homework and all school pressure.
Oh, you're
and
asking
things like
me
that.
What is stressful?
That's right,
for them.
stressful for your girls.
It's probably dealing with me, actually.
Dealing with you. Well, this is what that's what my daughter told my wife is that meeting paternal expectation is the most stressful thing. I really thought I was quite cool about everything, and then on reflections, clearly I failed.
Which school did you go to again?
Chunghua.
No wonder. Okay. We were discussing stress just now. It's Universal Children's Day. That was one of the articles that came out in the BBC and, you know, just a couple of days ago. Up next, we're going to be discussing obesity and sleep, how much sleep affects your obesity rates. We always focus on food, but things like, you know, sleep patterns also play a huge part. So that's coming up next. If you have a question, you can always call us on 0377 109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019000. I want to get your views on stress, on obesity, on sleeping patterns, as well as our children's dependency on technology. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. Together with Dr. George Lee, this Friday, it is Universal Children's Day on Sunday.
Blimey.
Now, Joel
teenage
has got,
madness.
Yes, Joel has big plans. I mean, you know, I think what comes through is, he wants to provide this for people who cannot fly.
That's right. It's like, you know, with swimming pool in the air.
And
it's
a bar.
Yeah,
don't
clearly,
forget that one.
Clearly very inspired by Tony.
Absolutely.
Right, okay.
Except for this is going to be low cost.
Right.
Just like Tony, but in a different way.
That's right.
I'm sure they'll have blankets.
But you have to pay for it.
Yes, possibly. Okay, the second article we're going to be tackling today is led by academics in University College of London. You want to tell us a little bit more, George?
Well, okay, this is academic UCL's articles. Basically, the researchers found that from examining records of the health and circumstances of children born in families across the UK between 2000 and 2002, and then they show that there are disrupted routines exemplified by irregular sleep patterns, skim consuming breakfast could influence the weight gain through the increase in appetite and consumption of energy-dense food. You know, obviously, these will challenge the widely held view that soaring childhood obesity rates could cause solely by the overeating. I mean, skipping breakfast and irregular sleep patterns, you know, really has been identified as a key reason why children may have become dangerously overweight. I mean, we see this in Malaysia, don't we?
It's like, we do.
Yeah, this is quite alarming. I mean, this study basically concluded that child's consumptions of sugary drinks, which, you know, in UK, they're trying to kind of clamp down on it with sugar tax, and then all the amounts of television that they watch and being, you know, having sedentary lifestyle, and then are not just a strong predictor who will gain or gain an unhealthy amount of weight.
Yep. One of the other things is it also establishes the risk of a child born to an overweight or obese mother could end up with excess weight themselves.
Well, it's partly because the lifestyle is that the mother eats a lot and the child will eat a lot as well. And I mean, in light of, you know, Universal Children's Day, obviously we focus so much on adult obesity, diabetes and things like that. But one thing that we probably ought to focus on is obesity in children is something that is induced by parents.
Absolutely. We're role models when we fail to see that.
And or we fail to because we have this kind of like, mentality of giving them the best, you know, feeding the absolute, you know, rich food and everything like that. But by doing that, you're clearly, according to this study, you're harming them. And then you're actually, impairing their upgrowing.
You know, studies conducted by the Nutrition Society of Malaysia, that has revealed that almost 30% of children and teenagers between the ages of 6 and 17 years are either overweight or obese.
That's 30%.
George, that's a very high number.
6 to 17, 30%. I mean, it's like that's equivalent to the adult obesity rate as well, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not terribly sure at the moment of latest statistics, but I know we lead in the region.
All right.
In Southeast Asia, we're the fattest nation.
Yeah. So we drink
Did I tell you Putrajaya is the fattest city in Southeast Asia?
Seriously?
Yes.
Oh. Something that we're eating over there.
I told the Minister of Health, you need to cut down on tea breaks. Okay, we spoke to Dr. Amar Singh. He is a senior consultant pediatrician and head of the pediatric department at Hospital RPB in Ipoh on his thoughts on this study. Dr. Amar, in this study, in a way, do you think it's misleading?
I think that studies in obesity in children and adults are difficult. And if you read enough studies, you'll see different results. And sometimes, for example, I saw one study a long time ago that said, eat frequent meals, that's good for you. Mm-hmm. And then recently, this year, another study came out saying, eat three main meals, that's better for you. So I think studies in obesity are fraught with difficulty in doing them. And we are changing so rapidly as a society. So the factors that we thought about 20, 30 years ago may not be the same. Having said that, I think this study is very important. It does show that two critical things. One, the fact that children don't sleep enough. And second issue is that they're very busy children as a whole, that the study suggests, that they skip breakfast. They don't have time for things. I think those are important factors in obesity.
What is the science behind it? How does a lack of sleep and, you know, skipping a meal, for an example, what is the science that's linked to obesity?
I think that for the skipping the breakfast, we long recognize that you need to start your metabolism in the morning. Eating a breakfast in the morning starts your metabolism, and that enables you to burn up your calories. So if you, many women I know in particular skip their breakfast thinking that it's going to help them lose weight.
Guilty as can be.
Yeah, but we recommend the other way around. Eat a nice healthy breakfast and a medium lunch and a small dinner. That's a better way to live and a way for weight reduction. But most people tend to do the opposite. They skip their breakfast, don't get their metabolism going, then eat a decent lunch, and then tend to have a very heavy dinner, which tends to stay unused and put on weight. So a lot of good work showing that eating breakfast starts off your metabolism. I think that the irregular sleep and skipping the breakfast together suggests to us that children are pressured for time. And so then food gets grabbed. You tend to eat convenient food rather than sit down and have a proper meal with other individuals like your family. You might eat a burger or eat some fast food. So I think irregular sleep and skipping breakfast tends to change the type of meals you eat, and that leads to obesity.
I think what was interesting in this study is that what I'm making of it is that we are emphasizing the wrong contributing factors towards obesity. We've focused very much on the type of food that we're eating, and we're saying the lack of exercise and the high-calorie food that our children are ingesting is the main reason for obesity. But this sort of throws things off a little.
Yeah, I think those factors haven't been dismissed by the studies. They're suggesting that these are irregular sleep and skipping breakfast leads to eating then high-caloric meals and having not enough activity or exercise in your life. So I think they're trying to explain those other factors. I think you can't run away from those cardinal factors that if you eat very high-caloric, especially very high-carbohydrate meals, and you don't exercise a lot, you will definitely end up having a weight problem. What we've seen over the last 20, 30 years is a massive change in social dynamics, and children today don't play very much anymore. There's not that much activity. Most of it is indoor, most of it is electronic rather than physical activity outside. And that's why the irregular sleep is there. Children end up with electronic device fairly late in their life or watching television too late with their parents and sleep poorly.
But, you know, we've always blamed safety as one reason why we don't. Our children are not exercising enough. If we learn to accept that fact, then can we work on other areas to ensure our children are not obese?
I did one study and 80% of parents told me they don't have the children outdoors because of safety. So I agree with you, that's it. I think we can accept that, but we still have to find alternatives. I think I wouldn't want to run away from our children exploring nature, going outdoors, being involved, playing like we used when we were young, playing outdoors. It's important that while we accept the reality, we generate safe environments for our children to play outdoors. What we've done in this generation is that we've largely gravitated towards using indoor play areas like gyms as a mechanism to overcome that. But there's nothing that beats really going outdoors and getting involved in nature.
And that goes back to us as parents, isn't it? Taking the initiative
to
do that. The researchers in this study in the UK, they studied about 19,244 families from the year 2000 to 2002. Is this a good enough study for us to reflect upon in this side of the world?
Oh, yeah, I think that's a very, very good study size. You know, that's not easy to do for that duration of time and that volume of families. So definitely I will look at this data very seriously and put into place. But we need to recognize also that socially we may not be the same as those in UK. You know, they have got an issue with winter climate, and that cold alone tends to help people put on a bit of extra weight. We, on the other hand, have a problem where people are rapidly improving their economic status. We've had people who were poor and then rapidly becoming middle or upper middle class. And these are parents who tend to then actually give their children all the things that they did not have. This may not be so true for UK. So while we look at that data, and it's good data, I would definitely consider it. I think we need to look at our own social dynamics as well.
Another thing that came through in this study is the link between an overweight or obese mother that translates to an overweight child. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's very true. We've always seen that as been a cornerstone of much of the research being done. We also did one piece of research at the CRC here in Ipoh showing that parents who are overweight can't recognize obesity in their own children. It's common sense, of course, that kind of research, but still had to be done.
Why? Is it because of our mindsets as Asians where, you know, if you are skinny, it's not really a good thing?
No, I think it's more the other way. I think parents who look after their bodies and are slimmer tend to see overweight problems in their children. Parents who themselves are overweight tend to accept a bigger body size in their children.
I see.
But what the fact is that if you are bigger, you tend to give birth to bigger children, and your children tend then to eat the same way you eat and live the same lifestyle you live, and generally tend to behavior as well.
Okay. It's Universal Children's Day today. Would you have a message?
If I had one message right now in our generations, is turn off our screens. I would say that, you know, what we're losing today is time with our children. We seem to be in a hurry, in a very busy sort of performance-orientated childhood, trying to get our children to secure a future for them, but we're losing the present. And we're getting so involved in social media, electronics, answering our devices all the time, we hardly have any interaction with our children of a meaningful form. So for Children's Day, perhaps turn off your screen, don't listen to any of your notifications, you know, go out there, spend some time with your kids, listen to them, just have some fun with them.
That was Dr. Amar Singh, Senior Consultant Pediatrician, Head of the Pediatric Department in Hospital RPB Ipoh. There you go, George.
What's your thought?
Verdict is out. Guilty, yes. I need to throw my phone off the dining table during dinner.
Yeah, well, apparently there's this so-called tet bin. I mean, basically, before you walk into the dining room and everybody put your devices into a tet bin. I thought that's a good idea. We still haven't really managed to do that. One thing that I heard earlier on, which I think it's really interesting, because now I can blame my parents, right? Because, you know, they say that, you know, the big parents tend to have big children. Well, you know, people tend to say it's the big bones. It's like, in fact, I don't know. It's like, you know, my family tends to be kind of on the big side. So
Stop it, George.
Stop it. So this is me having therapy, trying to find reasons why I end up like this. On Universal Children's Day.
Day, yes, George. Work on your kids. They're slim kids. I know they're slim kids. So don't blame. They're not following in your footsteps, for sure.
Thank goodness for that.
Okay. You know, Dr. Amar spoke about technology and putting that aside, and that's exactly what we're going to be discussing up next after the market update. Our children and their dependency on technology. If you have a question or if you want to just be a part of this conversation, give us a call. The number is 0377 109 000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019 000. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivisodi. It's our Health and Living segment. It's a Friday and Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, in the studio with me. We're celebrating Universal Children's Day on BFM. And it is, of course, this coming Sunday, but yeah, we decided that we'll do it today. And this is our Universal Children's Day show.
Yeah, absolutely. And I quite like it because I can get used to it. I don't have to do too much talking.
It's turning out to be therapy for you, George.
Absolutely.
Always goes back to your childhood, always goes back to your children.
Always blame the genes or the mother.
Of course, always. So our last story today is an article that came out where a judge has ordered Amazon to refund the parents of children who made in-app purchases on Kindle and Android devices without the parents' consent. And this is between the years 2011 and 2014. And apparently this was the case amongst Amazon, Google, as well as Apple. And 2011 to 2014, there weren't much safeguards in place. So children could just have press, slide their fingers and it would just accumulate in the parents' credit cards.
Let me get this straight. This is like some sort of apps for games and things like that, right?
So in order to move to the next level,
then you have to buy some credits and that sort of thing. So my kids have done that for a long time. I mean, it's like, you know, this is 2011.
How much have you lost?
I have no idea. Because you just assume it's all lumped in together with your subscription and that sort of thing. And then you don't look. But the thing is that, you know, come to think about it, somebody somewhere realized that this is purely taking advantage of the children, really, isn't it? I mean, this is a system taking advantage of the children.
That's changed now, George. Yeah. After 2014 and all these cases came through, Google made a first payment out of $19 million that was settled. And the last one, of course, now is Amazon.
Yes.
And we spoke to Matt Armitage of Culture Pop. He's our tech guy. He does a lot of shows on Tech Talk. He shared his views with me and he did say one child in this case racked up a bill of $2,600. And so, hence...
angry parents.
Very angry parents. So this is what Matt had to say about this article. Matt, have there been similar cases in the past in Malaysia?
It's hard to say in Malaysia specifically because the rules and regulations don't relate specifically to the country. These are international stores. So you can say with a degree of certainty that if in the US this has been an issue, it's probably been an issue in Malaysia as well. I would imagine the parents have just contacted the companies directly they've contacted, whether Apple or Amazon or Google. I would imagine it would be Apple and Google that were more of an issue in Malaysia because many fewer people have Amazon accounts here than they do in other countries. Certainly there was the case in the US 2 or 3 years ago when one young girl racked up a bill of $2,600 on one of these games, you know, buying the tokens to extend life or whatever. And it can be done very, very quickly. So the companies have had to respond and to clamp down on the ease with which kids can pay money within these games to continue playing.
And, you know, 2014, Google had a similar lawsuit and they did a payout then?
Yes, Google, I think, had to pay out something like $19.5 million. Apple had to pay out somewhere in the realm of, I think, $32.5 million US dollars. These weren't fines. These were in refunds to the consumers who had overpaid or their children had been able to access this content.
Well, how do you prove something like this, Matt? I mean, I know you have security now in place after those cases, but sometimes even when you put in a password, it lasts about half an hour and children can actually go to town with these purchases in that half an hour.
Actually, usually you can put it so that every single purchase has to be password approved. If you've got it set for your own ease of use, then that is an issue, of course. I personally would recommend that kids cannot, if they've got their own devices, they don't actually have access to the stores themselves. That still needs parental oversight for every single purchase.
So there are better safeguards in place now?
There are better safeguards in place. The companies themselves, because they do bear responsibility, they take a 30% cut typically on most app purchases. So if you look at that $2,600 that the young girl racked up, 30% of that went to Apple, which is nearly $800. That's a large sum of money. So they do bear responsibility for preventing children from doing this. And also because they're the ones that set the terms and conditions for app developers to come into these environments and to sell. So they do have control. They do have responsibility. These processes are safeguarded. It is more difficult for children to buy within these apps now. There are two-step procedures in a lot of the apps and a lot of the app stores that will actually lock them out. But parents still bear a lot of responsibility.
And hence my question, do you think parents are blasé about protecting their children online in general?
Absolutely. Very recently, I was in an Apple store and a gentleman had bought a laptop for his 10 or 11-year-old son. And he was talking to the tech guy there about ways that he could lock down the laptop and protect the content. And I was listening to the conversation. And in the end, I just said to the guy, look, whatever you do to this laptop, this kid will be able to bypass it in about 2 minutes flat, probably 30 seconds. The only way you can guarantee what he uses is to make sure that laptop is only used in a public space under supervision from you or another guardian or parent. That is ultimately the only way you can safeguard the experience of the kids, to make sure that they are supervised when they're using these devices. So you know what content they're using. You know, it's not really even about spending money. The spending money is incidental. We are very blasé about this. And, you know, it's easy for a stressed and harassed parent to simply give the password to the kid rather than take the device and do it themselves. You know, they might be cooking or cleaning or whatever. But it's better to just take the time and to take the responsibility and know what your child is doing.
When do you think you should empower the children, Matt? Or is there no such thing as empowering online is concerned?
No, I think there's no such thing as empowering. I mean, it's like with anything, you have to give them a sense of moral judgment. You have to let them know what is acceptable, what isn't acceptable. Of course, kids are going to push the limits. They're going to push at those boundaries wherever they can. So that's why it's so important to have these devices in a way that you can control.
Well, you're the best control, honestly. but it's hard work, Matt.
Yes, I know. I mean, it's easy for me. I don't have kids, so I'm...
I do, telling, and I'm telling yes, you it's exactly. hard work.
I know it's very, very hard, but we live in a society now where we have technological advance that is far in excess of our ability socially to catch up. So we haven't caught up with the behavioural ethics that go along with these kind of devices. Everything from, you know, using a smartphone at the dining table. All of these things, we're simply only developing the social skill set to accompany these technological advances. And it is going to take a long time for it to catch up. It's going to take a long time for this set of social guidelines to be put into place. And yes, that does put additional pressure on parents, but there's no structure. You're in uncharted territory here. So you really do have to go that extra mile to safeguard your children, because they are going to be developing attitudes and skills that they're going to be taking into that future. And literally, we have no idea where the technology is going to go.
So what you're saying is really their online habits is an extension of real life.
Well, if you talk to a lot of kids, they don't see a distinction between the online and the offline, which is why it's so important. And I think that's probably one of the most difficult things for parents to understand, the concept of oversharing. For this generation, there is no concept of oversharing. Everything is simply available online. So in a way, you're living your life very transparently, but also you're curating your life and you're trying to present an image of a life. This is very difficult for parents to wrap their heads around, but I think by giving them that strong sense of right and wrong, basic manners and social skills, that will take them from their offline to their online world.
Just very quickly, what's your take on mobile app games and children?
Well, my views on children are a little bit complicated.
Share them, Matt. It's all right.
No, no.
It's Universal Children's Day.
Yes, of course. I love my nieces and nephews. I'm very happy with my own decision not to have children. That was the right decision for me. In terms of mobile games and apps, I think they do have a role. I mean, it's good entertainment. Some of the games can be educational as well. But it's like anything. You know, I remember my parents trying to limit the amount of TV exposure I had, and it's exactly the same thing. You, as a parent, have to limit the exposure that kids have to these devices, and not, you don't simply hand them a tablet to quieten them down or to shut them up while you're doing something else. Use them as they're supposed to be, tools for entertainment and education, but switch them off.
That was Matt Armitage of Culture Pop. Goes back to the basics, George, manners and social skills.
Yes, you know, you have to set an example for them to follow your manners and social skills.
I know. You can start eating with your kids so that they understand table manners and skills on the dining table, isn't it? Okay, we're going to take one call. LTY has been waiting for a long time. How are you, LTY?
Afternoon, LTY.
Yeah, I'm fine, as usual. I'm fine, improving day by day, all right? That's my philosophy. Mm-hmm. You should, especially among elderly, you should try to improve day by day. That is my philosophy. Okay, regarding stress in children, I find nowadays children are under very stressful situation. I mentioned particularly about my grandchildren, how they study. Sometimes I wonder whether it really harm them or not. Now, my point is this. Nowadays, children are learning, stereotyping and spoon feeding. But my idea is we must teach children to be critical, analytical, creative, and innovative, which I'm trying to teach them, all right? And another thing, there's a difference, Josh, there's a difference between male and female brain.
Yes.
Especially the amygdala and hippocampus.
Yes.
Because male is less emotional compared with male, because the amygdala works differently, all right?
Of course. All right. Thank you very much, LTY. Valuable input indeed. We spoke about the insula.
That's right.
In the amygdala, am I correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, I think increasingly we begin to understand the complexity of, you know, the brain and how it functions in different genders, and also how it's developed in adolescence to develop into adulthood, really.
Okay. So we come to a close. It is Universal Children's Day. Would you have a message?
No, I want to hear your message first.
Well, I don't know. Just enjoy. And I think parents just chill. You know, take it one day at a time. Keep your eyes and ears on the ground. Forget your parents.
Forget your parents.
How
forget how
you
they brought
up. Yeah. Stick to the basic values and your belief system.
You know.
But don't be too hard on the children.
Well, I accept that point. It's like, you know, because actually today has been fantastic for me, because for a change, I'm listening to a lot of things. I was listening, right? Okay. The two things that I found quite contradicting, you know, we have that clips of that boy, you know, the teenager who said, you know, he wanted to build a swimming pool in a plane mm-hmm. and low cost and everything. And I love that. You know, on one hand, we want them to set free. And then the motto of the BFM's Universal Children's Day is be different. Don't be someone you're not, right? Okay. And on the other hand, we come up with all these restrictions and said, look, you know, we can give you power, empowerment, but we have to restrict you with this. This they can't do, this they can't do. And then, you know, eating, you have to have breakfast, you have to do this. And then, you know, so it's quite contradicting. And what I've learned from today's program is that, you know, the world is changing, it's evolving very fast, and there's no right or wrong way. But if as parents, you actually just set a good example, you follow the right values, you know, communicate with your kids, and like you said, don't be too harsh on them and trust them. And then therefore, I think hopefully they can fly.
Are you sure you meant what you said?
After today's show, I genuinely do, because, you know, whatever...
After all that therapy, you're finally seeing the light.
Finally seeing the light.
Wonderful.
You know what is the most important thing that I always say to the kids is that no matter what mistakes you make in life, it is a lesson that you will actually, you know, aid you in a future journey.
Wonderful. Happy Universal Children's Day, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Pleasure.
Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Whether it's watching your favorite streaming videos, or using your domestic data plan when you're overseas, or making calls even when there's no mobile coverage, we know how precious your data is to you. That's why at U-Mobile, we designed our network to be data-centric from the very start, so that your data is yours to enjoy anytime, anywhere, without compromise. Welcome to U-Mobile, where data hearts you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.